Yesterday we had a chance to begin to appreciate Rav Shimon Shkab's insight. Rav Shimon Shkab's chakira, if you prefer that terminology. Then the world of the Torah HaSveikas, when you have a tool, a response, how you deal with a lack of information, how you deal with suffering, so those tools will often come in one of two flavors. Either they're actually dealing with the suffix. You don't know what the information is. Here's the information. Let me give you the information. Eidos is pretty clearly that way. Shtar is pretty clearly that way. We are convinced that, or we're willing to accept that as reliable evidence that, in fact, this event did occur. That, in fact, that event did not occur. The two Eidim tell us, the Shtar tells us, that's a Bir HaMetzius. Obviously, as the Rambam points out in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, one never knows for sure. Any modality of evidence, it could be it's wrong, it could be the Eidim are lying, it could be the Shtar of the forgery. But we see that as the Torah is being covered, that's a reliable standard of evidence. And a reliable way of being mevar, the suffix of determining what in fact the facts are. So sometimes you have a tool in the world, the Torah HaSveikas, that's a beer, it's a mevar. Other times, it's not really telling you what the facts are, it's just telling you practically how do you deal with the suffix. I have a suffix, I'm not going to extinguish the suffix, I'm not going to solve the suffix, I don't know what the facts are. Given that you don't know what the facts are, what do you do? So the most obvious example of a hanhaga is suffix daraisa l'chumra, suffix rabban l'kula. It's a suffix, you don't know what the facts are, I'm not telling you the facts. I don't know what the facts are either. You know what the facts are. Be machmer, be mekel, and so on and so forth. So Rav Shimon suggests that rov is, at least we paskin, is a mevar. Well, it's actually telling what the facts are. This is probably, these are probably the facts, and therefore we have the right to assume that they are indeed the facts. Halachic margin of error, halachic standard of evidence. Well, chazaka is not telling you what the facts are. I know what they used to be. I know what the facts are now. Maybe it changed. Maybe it didn't change. I have no reason really to assume one way or the other. And therefore, here's what you do. Rather than merely saying if it's the right to be machmir, if it's drabban to be mekel, you're saying whatever your prior conduct was, continue that conduct. However you were dealing up until now, you knew. Until a week ago, you knew that the item was tar. You knew that the mikvah was male. And therefore, you were using the mikvah. So you don't know if it's male now or not. So you continue to act based on the same premises. I don't know if they're true or not. It's just a rule of a hanhaga. A birur versus a hanhaga. And in light of that, we had yesterday discussed five nafkaminas in the perspective that while rov is a mevarer, chazaka is a mir hanhaga. Three of those nafkaminas spoke to the practical weakness of chazaka because it's a hanhaga. And two of them spoke to the strength of chazaka because it's a hanhaga. Let's rearrange the list a little bit, the list of nafkaminas from yesterday. Number one, nafkaminas in rov being a mevar, and specifically chazaka being a hanhaga. So number one was that ruba chazaka, ruba adif, according to the chachamim. According to the chachamim, chazaka loses, not because chazaka is per se, has less points than rov, but because chazaka is a hanaga. Chazaka is a rule for what to do when the suffix remains, but since the rov solves the suffix, so the chazaka does no longer play. Chazaka does not work once there's a mevar. Number two, so that was taharas paragimel, kiddushin, payment out. Number two was Agaras Asidos, predicting the future, which Chazaka cannot do. That was Gittin Chavches. Chazaka cannot do that because, why not? But Rov, on Daf Lama Gimel, Rov can, Tosa says, predict the future. Yeah, it's because Rov deals with facts and data. So these are the facts and these are the facts. I don't care if past, present, or future. But if it's merely a rule of behavior, Chazaka is just a hanaga. So what rule of behavior is it? It could be anything. So it happens to specifically be the rule of behavior that the Torah was mechadesh in Chulun Daf Yud Amud Beis is continue into the present what you've been doing up until now. Okay, but not continue into the future. Number three is that it leaves the suffix. That's perhaps not the most elegant way of saying it. It's mashir as a suffix, but it leaves the suffix. You have a memon of shach. Right? That had come up in Psachim Daf Yud, the Mishnah of Shnei Shvilin, Taharas Perek Hei, which we had also seen in the Bavli, Psachim Daf Yud, that Reuben walks on road number one, Shimon walks on road number two. One of the two of them is Tameh. They both have a chazaka, so that has both a weakness and a strength. The weakness is that they remain, even though each one has a cheskas tahara, they do remain safek tameh, such that if they combine, then they're tameh. So if Reuven and Shimon both touch Levi, if Reuven and Shimon both stick their fingers in the milk pail, whatever it is, if Reuven and Shimon both touch the same person, the same item, that item will be tameh, and tameh b'toras vaday. As Tosin had stressed, because each one has a cheskas tahara. Yeah, each one has a cheskas tahara. It doesn't tell me that. It doesn't make them tahar. And it doesn't even tell me for sure that they are tahar. It just says, you're safik tameh, safik tahar. You're safik tameh, safik tahar. So therefore, continue to act as you have up until now. But if they both collide, they both touch Levi, so the safik remains. Let's just continue the list, and then let's circle back for questions. These marmakamas, though, also give you the first strength we came across, is that chazaka does work by a tarti desasra. The chazaka can tell me that Reuven is going to be tar and Shimon is going to be tar. So sometimes we drop on and we limit that because of public perception, but fundamentally and often even practically, Chazaka does work with Makam Tarif Disaster. It's the same Marmakabos. That's the same Mishnah Shmishmi. I will tell Reuven your tar, I will tell Shimon your tar, as long as you don't collide, each one continues to act tar, which is paradoxical, but it makes perfect sense since Chazaka is only a Hanhaga. It's not saying you're tar and you're tar, those would be contradictory facts. It's saying, factually, you may or may not be tar. Factually, you may or may not be tar. Those are logically compatible statements. Each one is suffix, tameh, suffix, tar. That's true. And since each one remains a suffix, here's what you do. And then, finally, in terms of nafkamin, as we saw yesterday, here we come back to where we started with the Ruba Bachazaka case, the Tina Kanimsa Besada Issa. One of the other things we noticed there, while Ruba Bachazaka, Ruba Adif is a statement of the weakness of Chazaka, it buried within that case is also a statement of the strength of Chazaka, which was, if it's Nifrad, Mishorosh HaSafik. Unlike your Rov, Chazaka, the Shorosh HaSafik, the factual Safik, in the case of the Tinik and Nimsa Besad East, the Mishnah and Taurus Parag Gimel that was quoted in Kiddushin, the Shorosh HaSafik was what? Was this a child? Is the child Tamei or Tar? The last month, has this little kid, rummaged around, and in his rummaging, has he come across a Sharetz? Has he come across Basar and Avela? So the factual suffix, the Shorosh HaSafik, is about the behavior of the kid, about the history of the child. The Chazaka that we're dealing with is a Chazaka on the Tahara Sa'isa. That 5-10 minutes ago, this Isa was Tar. What connection is there between the fact that this Isa was Tar and whether or not the kid is Tamei? But what does it help me? I need to know, is the kid Tamei or Tar? I need to know, has this kid come across any dead mice? What does it help me that Doe was Tar 5 minutes ago? So the answer is, in terms of being Mavar the Suffolk, it doesn't help me at all. If I wanted to bring a rove to bear, which Shachachamim do, it's a rove about children. See, there could be a rove about Shrotzim, there's going to be a rove about children, because children and Shrotzim are the Shorosh HaSafik. But the Chazaka at play doesn't have to be about the Shorosh HaSafik. The chazaka at play is as we discuss decision making and wise decision making, which is after all what Taurus Asfakis is all about, how to decide in complex, nuanced situations. So the chazaka at play, because the chazaka isn't being actually speaking or solving the suffix at all, just telling me you have a suffix, the suffix remains, we do not know if we didn't have a rove, if we couldn't figure out, the kid's a little bit older, there is no clear rove about whether or not he's come across an avatoma. There is no clear rule of whether the child is tamei or tar. It's an open suffolk shakel, whether he's tamei or tar. So then we'd say, chazaka of the isa helps. It doesn't tell me that the kid is tamei or tar. That's a suffolk, and therefore the status of the isa remains a suffolk, an unsolved mystery, an unsolved suffolk. And it's not a mavar that solves mysteries, but instead chazaka is anaga. This tells me, how do you move forward? How do you practice halacha when you indeed do not know what the facts are. So that's where Adkan we got up to yesterday. Rav Shimon Shkap's approach, and so far, five nafkaminas. Here's where we're headed. We already, in the fifth nafkamina, sort of went back to that case in Kiddushin Dafpei, Rubu v'Chazaka, which is a very, very, very central gemara in this whole world of Torah Sasvekas. We're going to pause for questions, and then after that, there were some hands. And after that, we're going to move forward and seek to wrap up our treatment of the sugya for now. It could go on forever. But seek to wrap up our treatment of the sugya for now in two ways. Number one, to add a nafka mina number six. And it's similar to the beginning that it is a weakness, a very fascinating weakness of chazaka. And then we're going to go back. So far, these nafkaminas have basically been about chazaka. We'll go back to the root and talk about rove. We'll go back to the, and we'll talk about two things that emerge from that gemara: a focus on rove and a focus on remeya. And in doing that, hopefully, we'll be able to come back to get in that base and appreciate more fully what's going on in the gemara and Tosfos. But first, questions.
If we would use rove, let's say in the case of like there are five roads going out of a city and one of them has a mace, so we would follow the rove for good, so that's Mavar. Maybe if we say that it's a Tavir, then it's Mavar that he didn't go down the rope.
Right.
That has come. So let's say we later find out that he actually did go down that rope. What would the...
That's an interesting question. You're raising a general question. You think about Bira versus Hanaga. So what happens if your Bira turns out to be wrong? I had a rove. Right? 95% chances. Let's say a Kohen takes a flight. A Kohen gets on an airplane on the assumption that there is no mace being transported on that flight. Right? Some flights that are Strahl are carrying mace. For Kavur and Eretz Israel. So Cohen has to make sure that he's going on a flight that's not also carrying mace, otherwise it's a Tumas mace problem. So let's say he says, this type of flight, very, very unlikely, this type of flight, this timing, the morning flights, flight from Newark, whatever, all the factors. Or, you know, there's a growing Jewish community in Vegas. Actually, it's not in the Far Darbona part of Vegas. There are a lot of Jewish communities in New York City, not in the Far Darbona part of New York City, but New York City is a big place. So there's actually a couple of growing from communities in the suburbs of Vegas. I don't know if there are any direct flights from Vegas out itself. But if there are, you know, it's a smaller community, the vast majority of flights won't be carrying mace. Or I'm flying from Zurich to Eretz Israel. It's a smaller community, the vast majority of flights aren't carrying mace. So Cohen hops on a plane, and over the course of conversation on the plane, he discovers that in fact there is someone, there's a family flying with a nifter on the plane to Eretz Yisrael. So he is coming. Okay, he made the right decision. If he had, we'll talk about some more in a couple of minutes, if he had adequate rove, so he had the right to get on. But now it turns out that now he gets better beer. He had good beer, he had a rove, now he has better beer, direct information. Okay, so now he knows that he is coming. He didn't do anything wrong before because he was following proper procedure. Rabbeinu David, not, I'm sorry, not Reb Sachem, even though that would be That would be even more geschmack. Nor do I have a cup of rishis called seltzer here. But Rabbi David also wrote another prakim. Well, there you go. Other prakim of Masechus Pesachim. And the first prakim of Masechus Pesachim, the sugis of Bedikas Chametz, Rabbi David talks about this. Let's say I did a Bedikas Chametz. And then over the course of Pesach, I discover Chametz. The Gemara talks about that. You find Chametz in the middle of Pesach. So what do you do? So Rabbi David makes a comment that we do not say that retroactively you have been in violation of Rabbi Matzah for the last couple of days. I did it because I thought the Chametz was gone, and then in the middle of Chalmo, you really find cookies under the couch. Classic. Right? Finds it curious, whatever it is. Krispy Kreme. So, anything else that starts with a K or a C? Like Chametz. So you find Chametz somewhere around the house, so Rabbi David says, if you get rid of it right now, you're good, you're clean, you violated nothing. What do you mean, for the last few days I was in violation of owning chametz? No, I had a valid beer. I did a proper bedikas chametz. That too is a beer. Bedika is a type of beer. I have ascertained through exploration that my house is chametz free. Whatever, I did a search and destroy process. Whatever chametz I found, I eliminated. And I had the right to assume that my house is now chametz free. If I discover that was a good beer, obviously directly finding more chametz is an even better beer than in fact there is chametz. Okay, but for the first 2.5, 3.5, 4.5 days of Pesach, I had the right to rely on the best beer at the time, the Bedika, that my house is chametz free. So we don't say that in retrospect I violate. In retrospect, I did what I need to do. If from this point on I don't get rid of the chametz, now that I found the chametz, okay, obviously now my bedika stops being a valid beer, because now I had a better beer, I found the piece of chametz. Just like I had a rove that allowed me to get onto the plane. Okay, if subsequently I get even better beer than the rove, I actually discover here's a fan that tells me there is an iftar, Rahman al-Flan, on the plane. Okay, so now I discover I can't jump off the plane, but now I discover if the plane were to land and continue, the Kohen would have to get off. And the Kohen is going to have, or anyone else, is going to have to undergo the paraduma process in order to become tar. Because from this point on, now you know that in fact there was a mace there. But up until this point, you had the right, even retroactively, to have relied on, you did nothing wrong up until this point by relying on the best beer available. Well, does that help?
Yeah, but what if I get in between the touch
and Tamer? Look, factually we know that he is and was Tamer.
So anything that he touched would be
time. Yeah, yeah. We don't deny the facts. That goes back to the question of tense and timing. Not clear number two. Only chazaka is time limited. Rove is, because chazaka is just a hanaga, but rove is actually factual. So the facts are the facts are the facts. Whenever they were true, until whenever they're true, they are the facts. We don't care about past, present, future, past perfect.
If we follow the rove as it's facts, then during that time,
yeah, but now I know better.
Vada is going to supersede.
Yeah, for sure, for sure, for sure, yeah.
According to Rabbi Meir, who has Rosh Chabot said that, holds that a robe is a harhaga, not a mirror, would that mean that he can't apply robe to the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as I took pains to say before, once you talk about if something is mavar, so it's telling you the facts. So then it's going to have to be logical and rational. Once you have a hanhaga, it's just a rule. So the rules could have whatever rules they have. Now the rules could have whatever specifics, whatever specs they have. So the specific hagdara of what the rule of chazaka is continue to act going forward as you've acted up until now. It could have been a different rule. So how would rove work according to a mayor? It's a good question. I'm not sure. It could be it works in the future. It could be it doesn't. That's an interesting open question. I don't know. Either one is a possibility. Either one is a logical possibility. Yeah. One more question. Is that Yikusio?
In terms of the
Yikusio.
In terms of the third naftalina.
Yeah.
Isn't this svara why one person the goat are coming has probably come to us and the rabbi in the state of power?
Yeah, you ask interesting. I don't want to get too far afield into the world of Suffolk, Tumma, Suffolk, Tara, but I will say the following. Zev is raising important points. Once he raised, let's talk about it a little bit. The Mishnayos have a rule that's discussed among other places in the Bavli, Maseches Nazir, that Safik Dereis, in the world of Issur V'Hetar, it's Hei Safik Dereis L'Chomer Safik Rabban L'Kula. In the world of Mamon, we have a new rule, Safik Mamon L'Kula, in the sense of a Kula for the Muchzak. In the world of Mamon, when there's a Muchzak, the rule, the basic rule of Safik is a Motzei Mechaber Al Varaya. How about in a third field of Halacha, in the world of Tumah, Rabbi Shechter in Eretz HaTzvi, I think it's the second piece in Eretz HaTzvi, discusses this notion based on the Gra's formulation, based on Pasuk Neshoftim, that there are three major areas of Halacha. Halacha overall breaks into three fields, Isura, Mimona, and Tumah Vatara. So in the world of Tumah, and one of the distinguishing features, at least to an extent, is the rules of Safik. So in the world of Safik Tumah, we have a new rule that it depends on location. Safik Tumah v'Rishus HaYachid Sveikotameh, Safik Tumah v'Rishus HaRabim Sveikotar. So Tosus and Nazir, at the beginning of Perek Shnei Nazirim, points out what type of rule is that. It's based on a Gzeiras HaKasav, by Sota. Sota is not really about Tumah v'Tar in the usual sense. Sota is about adultery, and about it's Isser. But the Torah keeps using the language of Tumah in Nasa, thank you. In Parshas Nasa and the Parsha of Sota. The Torah uses the language of Tumah in several places. The Torah also uses the language of Tumah in the context of Machalos and Suros. We talk about Tameh animals and Tahor animals. The Torah uses Tumah and Tahara very, very, in a very, very strong, repeated way in the Parsha of Sota. So the Gemara understands that Sota is a type of Safik. It's obviously a Safik of whether Tumah in the sense of Znos occurred or not. And there the rule is that under some circumstances, Safik Tumah v'Rishus HaYachid Sveikotameh. That if the couple was secluded, that pair of people, I don't know if you should call them a couple or not, the adulterous couple, not the married couple, but one woman of a married couple and another man who may or may not be married, but not to this woman. So the adulterous pair were alone. If they were in seclusion, no one else was there, so then Sota is Asura Misafik. Until we're Mavara with the Mesota that in fact knows must occur. So the Gemara says that's a paradigm for Tumah in the more usual sense of Tumah, that if there were two or less people there, if it was a Shus HaYachid, then we say Safik Tumah is Tameh. But if not, then we say Safik Tumah is Tahar. So Tosus points out, so where's the Chiddush, where's the Gzeiras HaKasav? The Gzeiras HaKasav has been Chadish, which new din? That Safik Tumah Rishus HaYachid is Tameh. Safik Tumah Rishus HaRabim is Tahar. Tosus points out that's not a new din. That's based on the principle of Chazakah. That if I'm a Tahar person, and then I walk outside the door, and some guy left as a prank, you know, they left a little dead mouse on a string, and it was rigged so that sometimes the prank is you leave a little. Sometimes the prank is you leave a hat on the spring of the door, and if you open the door, the hat falls. Okay, that's one type of prank. Another type of prank is you leave a pail of water, and when you open the door, you get wet. A third type of prank is that you leave a dead mouse hanging from the top of the door. When you open the door, the dead mouse falls. That's a particularly gruesome prank. I don't recommend pranks in general. It also is a prank that has some of the Tara implications. Because a dead mouse, as we know, is a sheretz, is an avatama, and it's mitame v'maga. So if the dead mouse hit me as I was walking through the doorway, I am now a rishon l'tumah. If it did not hit me, I remain tahar. Until I walked through that door innocently, I was vadai tahar. Paraduma, mikvah, I'm good. I was good. And then I walked through the doorway, and some ill-considered prank, the mouse falls, and it may or may not have touched me. A safik negiyah. So if no one else is around, if it's Rishus HaYachid, there's a new chiddush in the world of Tumah, Safik Tumah Rishus HaYachid, Sveikot Tameh. But if it's not Rishus HaYachid, if Rishus HaRabin, then you revert back to the usual din, that if I'm against the Cheskas Tahar, I remain Tahar. Safik Tumah Rishus HaRabin is just another application of the rule of Chazak. Okay, so we had a chance, thank you for that opportunity to briefly touch on the world of of Tumah Tara, and to briefly touch on, here's another rule of Safek. One rule of Safek is Safek Tumah in the world of Issev Heter, Safek derives Lachurma Sarzbaran Hadban Lakula. In the world of Mamon, we have a very powerful rule of Hamotzeh Mechaveh El Haraya, and then the world of Tumah Tara, there's a new Chiddush that is Safek Tumah. Shir Sayachid, despite the Cheskes Tara, is still Sfeik Otamit. But Mishnah Tzara, you work with the normal rules. You follow if there's a cheskas tar, if there's a cheskas tumah, whatever the chazaka is, it is. Okay, so those are the five nafkaminas thus far. Now, let's go back to another very foundational Gemara, where Rov begins. Chulin Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. You remember, Rabbi Yisrael. The Gemara said, The rabbis tell us. Amar Rabbana means it's a principle all over Shas. The rabbis tell us repeatedly, but never tell us where they got it from. But there's this ongoing rabbinic assumption of the power of Rove. So where did they get it from? You remember, a little Chazara, the Gemara said, what do you mean? The Gemara right away said, where did it come from? I know where it's obvious where it's come from. Where did it come from? The Gemara said, what do you mean? Where did Rove come from? Yeah, Achar Amahatas. That's a silly question to ask. We all know Chumash, Achar Amahatas. To which the Gemara said, no. Bubala, the Gemara says, Bubala. Yeah, Achar Amahatas is beautiful, but it's limited to what type of rove? Ruba de Issa Kama. Right? Ruba de Issa Kama. Ruba de Issa Kama. That's based on Achar Rabin Mahatas. I said, that's very nice. But I wanted to know about Ruba, the Lesa Kaman, statistics. Not Teisha Chanuyos. Not where there's a closed set of data. Here are the 10 butcher shops. Not where there here are the 23 Dayanim. No, but I mean like statistical statements. The types of rove that usually come up. Most people do this. Most people develop like that. Most animals behave like this. Whatever it is. Most winter mornings... You know, most January mornings are cold. Well, depends where, depends what year, okay? With or without climate change, as the case may be. So the Gemara says, Ruba Leisa Kaman. That's not so obvious. So the Gemara gives a series over the course of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, wrapping onto Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara gives a series of suggestions. But maybe here's a parasha in the Chumash that's clearly assuming Rove. Here's a parasha in the Chumash that's clearly assuming Rove. We saw one. We saw the first one. Hi, evergreen carbonola. You can't dissect it into little pieces. I'm not allowed to do too much nituach. So I'm not allowed to start opening up the skull of the... of the Ola, that would be too much. And yet, if I don't open the skull, how do I know that's not a treifa? It must be I'm relying on Rove. The Gemara, that we saw that first one. The Gemara goes on to have a series of such, 8, 10, 15 such cases. We're going to see another one. We're going to see one other one in Parah Aduma in a couple of moments. Just to give you a sense of where the Gemara goes from there, there's a whole long list. You know, from an Alf, you know, from days. Then the Gemara says, well, these are all very nice. But none of them necessarily are a great source. Some of them we have specific kashas on. And some of the Gemara just says, well, okay, so maybe you rely on Rove when you have to. When there's no other way for the mitzvah to work on than Rove, okay, you rely on Rove. But like I was saying before, I want to rely on Rove to take an airplane. I'm a Kohen, I want to rely on Rove to take an airplane. There's no parsha in the Torah that has to take Kohen has to fly an airplane. Okay, maybe if there's no way to bring carbon ola other than Rove, you rely on Rove. There's no way to bring a Parah Aduma than Rove. Okay, rely on Rove. Then the Hecha case, you can rely on Rove more broadly. So the Gemara says, oh, yeah, it's a good question. The topic is based on how where it sort of ends. Then moves on to the next topic, the world of Shechita. So Rashi says, ooh, 1 second. What was the answer? So there are several possible answers. Now, it could be, that we had all those parashios, and they are all those specific makoros, all those specific parashios of Parah Aduma and Eden Zomah. Maybe they are valid, And it doesn't matter whether, you know, this mitzvah needs it or not. Another possibility, Rashi says, is maybe it's a halacha l'moshe mesina. Clearly, Chazal have been assuming that Rov works. We haven't found the pasuk. Okay, so maybe it's just maybe we just have to throw up our hands and say, I guess it must be halacha l'moshe mesina. Or option number three, maybe Rashi says, Achre, Rabin, Lahatos. Rashi says, maybe Achre Kechlos Akol, we come back to the beginning. Achre Rab Lahatos. What do you mean? But I thought we said only Ruba de Isakaman. You know, that Achre Rab Lahatos is called a case of Ruba de Isakaman, which is more obvious than Ruba de Isakaman. So that position in Rashi on Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph is interestingly turning the fundamental assumptions on its head. That Shita in Rashi is assuming, yeah, the Havamina was that Ruud de Issa Kaman is more powerful or more obvious. Because here, you actually see your data. Close set. 9 butcher shops, 10 butcher shops. Here it is. Ruud de Issa Kaman statistics, that's sort of, you know, out there. But Rashi says that maybe Lamaskana, we reject that svara. That was an opening svara. And maybe that's rejected. Yes, Ruud Leis HaKama is less obvious. I don't see the data in front of me, but it's much more powerful. It's not just coincidentally it happens to be there are 10 butcher shops in town, none of which are kosher. There's an underlying phenomenon. There's a reason. There's some biological principle, some psychological principle, some chemical principle, something to explain why it is. There's a reason why most people don't pay their debts on time. There's a reason why most 11-year-old boys do not grow up into Sarisim. There's a reason why there's a larger pattern at play. A scientific explanation, a psychological explanation. So that's how the sugya ends. Lamaisa, we do accept both Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Leisa Kaman. Ruba de Issa Kaman, within the first couple of lines, you'd often obviously say, clearly based on Achram Hatos. Ruba de Leisa Kaman, the Gemara spent a whole block looking at options, and it's not clear in the Gemara what the final answer is. We know that we accept Ruud Leis HaKaman, but in terms of where it comes from, in the Gemara it's not clear. But between Rashi at the end of the Sugya, Yud Beis Amud Aleph and Chulin, and a Rashi that the Rekiv Eger sends you to later to the Masechta, you end up with three possibilities. Working backwards, either it is based on Achram Lahatos, maybe Tak Achram Lahatos, Lemaskan is the source for both types of Rov, maybe Ruud Leis HaKaman is an even more obvious Ruud Leis HaKaman, Kavachorin. Or maybe halacha moshe mesina, there is no pasuk. Or maybe taka, one of the answers that the Gemara given of the course of Daf Yud Aleph is valid. And with that, now that we have sort of the big picture, let's zero in on one specific one of those parshas. We had seen the first one, or at least part of the first one. The first suggested makor for Ruud Leis HaKaman was Ola. Now let's spend a couple of minutes on. Each suggestion is given by a different Amora. The first one we had seen was Rabbi Lazar. Now let's look at the very bottom Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Rabbi Bar of Shela. Here we are. 9 lines from the bottom of Chulin Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, right over here. The line ends with Rabbi Bar of Shela. Rabbi Bar of Shela Omar Asim Paraduma. I can derive Ruud Leis HaKaman from the Parsha of Paraduma, from the beginning of Chukas. We're getting to it soon, Mirtz Hashem. We already passed Tu B'Shvat. That means that the Chodesh Adar is on the way, which has many, many significances. Significance for Simchas Purim. It's already time to start making Hachanas, Shloshim Yom Kodesh Purim. And it means that the Arba Parshas are on the way. Arba Parshas are on the way. So we're going to be laying Paraduma in around the month. Right. Shortly after Purim, we were laying in Parshas Parav. The beginning of Parshas Chukas. So when we Mirtz Hashem, and it's slightly more than a month from now, when we lay in Parshas Parav, you're going to remember that in addition to everything else at play, in addition to the fact that two of the biggest Masechtas and Shas are based on those Pesukim, Masechtas Olos, in terms of how you contract Tumas Meis and Masechtas Parav, in terms of how you remove Tumas Meis, there are many other things going on there as well. Famous Musar about Limud Torah, Eidat Torah Miskayemus, Lemisha Memus Atzmo Aleha, and perhaps the principle of Ruud Leis HaKaman and the Kashrus of Cheese. What do I mean? Take a look. Rav Bar Shela, Amar Asi Parah Aduma. We can derive Rubid Leisa Kaman from Parah Aduma. What's the story of the Parah Aduma? The Amar Rachmana, the Shochat V'Sarah. You remember the basics. A person is Tamei Tumas Meis. So the a key ingredient in the Tahara process is the ashes of the Parah Aduma. We take those ashes, the Afer, Parah Aduma, we're going to you mix the ashes, a little bit, speck of the ashes, into potentially a large amount of spring water, Mayim Chayim, and you mix the Afer Parah Aduma, the Mayim Chayim, and now those are Mei Chatos. Those are waters of Parah Aduma that can be sprinkled on a person or a kli as a part on day 3 and day 7 of his Tahara process, as a part of the process to remove the Tumas Meis. But how do you create Afer Parah Aduma? So you have to shecht it, and there are all sorts of specifications of how you shecht it, where you shecht it, and how harazesim. You have to be facing the, in a position where you're facing the front of the Beis HaMikdash, harazesim, the particular area of harazesim is that spot. You shecht and harazesim, and then you have to burn it together with several other ingredients, and those ashes become Afer Parah Aduma that can be stored for centuries, potentially, because you're taking... You're taking a drop at a time for enormous amounts of water. You can get, some of you have met a fellow who I met as well, who estimates you can get billions of hazaos out of a single Parah Aduma if you do the math. Okay, to be there as an A, one of the rules, the many, many rules, Maseches Parah is a big Masechtum, a lot of rules, a lot of dinim of the Pesukim. V'shochat v'sorav, here's one of those dinim. The Torah says you shecht the Parah Aduma and you subsequently incinerate, burn the Parah Aduma, turn it to ashes. So the Gemara understands, Rabbi Avshel is quoting a drasha that puts those two verbs together. Puts those two verbs together. So ma shchitas, what's the connection between the shchitas Parah Aduma and the shreimas Parah Aduma? Obviously, they're both being done to the same animal in sequence. So what is this drasha teaching me? The ma shchitas kishi shleima, av shreifas kishi shleima. Just like when you shecht it, it was a whole animal until you shechted it. So too, when you burn it, it's a whole animal. I cannot dissect the Parah Aduma before I burn it. I shecht it, you put it on the pyre, put on the other ingredients, etzeres, the ezov, and so forth, and then you set fire to it. You don't start cutting the parah up into pieces. Okay, good, a din. So one of the dinim of Parah Aduma is that you cannot dissect the parah in between the shechita and the sreifa. L'may nafkamina. Nafkamina number one, if you're doing the Parah Aduma, you should do it right. Okay. But nafkamina number two, for us, is how does that teach me that there must be Reuben Leisa Kaman at play? The lechosh demo treifa, says the Gemara. Well, one second, maybe it's a treifa, and we know from other psukim that that Parah Aduma shares some of the dinim of karbanos. It is referred to sometimes as a chatas. It's not actually a karban. You're shechting outside the Beis HaMikdash for starters, but it has certain. It shares some of the same features as karbanos. One of which is it cannot be a treifa. One second, this is similar to what we said about the karbanola, but even worse. You don't want to cut it up at all. Maybe it has a trefa in the lungs. Maybe it has a trefa in the heart. Maybe it has a trefa in the liver. Maybe it has a trefa, I don't know where, or in the brain. Any trefa. The vast majority of trefas are not visible from the outside. They said if it was attacked by a predator, was clawed by a predator, okay, that you can see. But most trefas require some sort of internal examination to be discovered. But if you're not allowed to open up the Parah Aduma, you're not allowed to cut it apart, so how do you know if it's a treifa? See, if you told me, I don't care if it's a treifa or not, good! But how does the Torah tell me, don't cut it open, but also it cannot be a treifa? How does that work? How does that work? They're logically incompatible. So what's the answer? Follow the rove. It must be. They say, look, most animals aren't a treifa, so if I can't look, I'll just assume, based on, so if I see evidence on the outside of the animal, that's a treifa, okay. Then I can't use that for a Parah Aduma. If from the outside it looks okay, from the outside it looks like it's probably not a treifa, you're following Rav. I v'chitei nafkamina. What would it matter if it's a treifa? Chatas kari rachmana. The Torah calls it a chatas before, a moment ago. The Torah refers to it as a chatas. It isn't actually a carbon chatas. It's not a carbon at all, but it does have some carbon-like features such as it is possible if it is a treifa. Okay, seems pretty straightforward. Okay, good. It can't be a treifa, but you're not allowed to check if it's a treifa, so it must be a reliant rove. Seems very straightforward. Tosfos has a fantastic kasha. Tosfos has a fine kasha. Tosfos says, who says you're relying on rove? And the Torah didn't say you're relying on rove. The Torah just said it can't be a treifa, but you can't check. No, it must be you rely on rove. Tosfos says, maybe I'm not relying on rove. Maybe I'm relying on something else. What else might I be relying on? What else might I rely on? Chazaka. Why is the chazaka? Well, it used to not be a treifa. Chazaka means it used to not be a treifa, so I can assume it's still not a treifa. How do I know the part used to not be a treifa? Maybe it was always a treifa. Gevaldik. Tosa says, maybe it's less than so. Tosa says, well, par aduma, treifa, this is some debate in later Maseches Chulin, but there are many who assume that if the treifos, the different conditions that are called treifos, are all things in which the animal cannot live for more than 12 months. So that means 12 months ago it must have not been a treifa if it's alive now. I maybe is less than 12 months old. The answer is the word para, that's how Tosa starts. That's the beginning of Masechus Mishnah is para also. Im Tomar, the second last Tosas on the Omer. Came in the para bashte shanim. Para means a cow, not a calf. It's not an egla. Egla rufa is different. But para, egla rufa was the previous piece of the Gemara. But para, Tosa says, para has to be at least 2 years old plus. So that means that it was alive more than a year ago, obviously. If it's alive now, and it was alive more than a year ago, what does that tell me? It must not have been a treifa then, otherwise it wouldn't have survived. Maybe it's a chazaka. According to the position, later in Chulin, Sarashas tells you where it looked up in the days near the beginning of Paragale Treifas, that a treifa cannot survive. So, right now we're in the year Tavshin Pei Gimel. So, if the para is alive right now, that means that a year ago in Tavshin Pei Beis, say a little more than a year ago, Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Pei Beis, Tu B'Shvat, today's the day after Tu B'Shvat. So, Tu B'Shvat Tavshin Pei Beis, a year and a day ago, it must not have been a treifa, otherwise it wouldn't have survived. It would have died by now. It wouldn't have made through 12 months. Last year was a Shana Beres. Actually, even more. Okay. Whatever it is. So certainly, if it was alive last year, Tu B'Shvat, and it's alive now, so then it obviously wasn't a treifa last year, Tu B'Shvat. So we should be good to go. And what's Tosa's point? You want to prove to me a new principle, a new chiddush of Ruleis HaKamad. There's no hechreach. It's not mukhrach. I already know the principle of Chazak Nekar. That's no longer a chiddush because I learned from Saras. This is just another application of Chazak. So how do you? Why is a mukhrach from here that there's something called Rov? Maybe there's just Chazak, which is no longer a chiddush. So Tosfos first tries one teretz, ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. And then they say, V'yesh lomar, the second teretz, kol chazaka shelo nizbara v'lo noda filo sha'achas lo azlidan basra. Tosfos says that a chazaka doesn't work if you didn't know it at the time. What does that mean? Meaning, right now, that we're more than a year after Tu B'Shvat Tashin Pei Beis. Right now, I know that last year Tu B'Shvat the animal was not a treifa. I'm convinced that if you would have done a CAT scan on the animal, you would have found, or if you would have checked the animal a year and a day ago, you would have found nothing wrong. Okay. Now I know that in retrospect, a year and a day ago, it was not a treifa. But did I know it then? If you've asked me last year, Tuvish, I'd say, is it treifa? What would you say? More? You said, well, a year and a day ago. It's a retroactive, retrospective, it's a chazaka. It's a chazaka that now I know that yesterday it was tar. Now I know that last year it was kosher. But I didn't know then. That's what Tosa says. The question is, that's a very nice chiluk. That's very clever. It's someone said to me, it's megareh tamoach, scratches your brain. Gets you exciting chiluk. Why does it matter though? Okay, so who cares? So it's a chazaka shlom zvara b'shaita. It's a chazaka that wasn't known at the time. But lamaisa, I now know that a year and a day ago it was not a treifa. Good, so have a chazaka. Who cares about the fact that it was lo nisvara b'shaita? I didn't know that. Okay, but I know now. We work with lamafreya all the time. Like we said before, right? If a fellow had a rove, it gets on a plane, then he discovers, in fact, the rove is wrong and there is tumah on the plane. So, okay, so now he knows that he's tamei, and then he would tamei 5 hours, you know? Gotta deal with the facts. You figure out the facts. So what does it matter whether I knew a year ago that it wasn't a trefa, or now I know that a year ago it wasn't a trefa? Am I enough, Kamina? What do you say?
Maybe he can't tell you about the past either.
Oh, good. Well, I don't need the chazaka to tell me about the past. I know about the past through the fact that it's alive now. You're close, though. Not that chazaka is not telling about the past. I know about the past. Chazaka can't work based on the past. Even though chazaka, another way, chazaka always works based on the past. Yesterday it was tar, so I assume I'm still tar. Yesterday the mikvah was full, I assume the mikvah is still full. But you're onto something. Right. It's another sort of variation of playing with tenses, yeah?
How long ago it was? In terms of like a day?
That would have been a different answer, which would be interesting. Maybe I can't have a chazaka from a year ago. Tosus could have said that. That would have been interesting. Maybe you can't, chazaka has to be from a recent past. Tosus, I don't know if anyone else could be, it's worth looking to see if other Rishonim say that. I don't think Tosus is saying that, though. Tosus is not saying a year or so long ago it doesn't establish chazaka. Which is actually interesting. They didn't say that. Like, who cares about a year ago? So long ago. But no, we're okay with that. There's not that Cheskes Marakama, which you may remember from your learning about Vasra, which according to some Achron is a form of Chazak in the car. 2 years ago, I was the owner of this land. So we'll assume I'm still the owner. That's a long time ago. But Chazak can work from the distant past. But Chazak can only work from the distant past or from the recent past, for that matter, if I already knew it then. If it's only now that I know what was going on then all of a sudden Tosa says, no, that's not a Chazak. Why not? Okay. It's a nice chiluk, but what's the hezbo? You know what he says? Maybe
it's
got a
trefiah.
It's true maybe it got a trefiah. That's the way Chazak always works. I mentioned the mikvah last week and it was mullet. But now I'm a sukkah, maybe lost some water yesterday. Right? I was tar 5 minutes ago. But now maybe I touched the sheretz or maybe not. And that's the way Chazak always works. I know the status was 2 days ago. I don't know if it changed yesterday. Okay, but are we sure?
Chazak usually is we knew something so we had an assumption about something so we can continue to keep that assumption. We didn't have an assumption about it to begin with. We only now created the assumption.
Good. Alicia is forcing us to look back at the board, which is what you should, as detectives, assume that if I told you we're going to have another nafkamina in the Chakira, even if I didn't, these are tools for thinking. These are categories for thought. Shimon is giving you tools to understand more things. Here we come across a new strangeness about Chazaka. Tos is just assuming, Chazaka doesn't work. A limitation on Chazaka. It can only work if I already knew the information at the time. Why? Who cares? Halakha is retroactive all the time. We often work with Lema Freya. So why does the sign of Chazaka doesn't work with Lema Freya? It says, Elisha, because what did Shimon teach us? That Chazaka is a Hanada. Chazaka isn't about the facts. Yes! If I figure out now what the facts were yesterday, so of course I'll. The facts are relevant regardless of past, present, or future. And that's what Eitan and Ha was starting to get at before. We already saw that part of the strangeness of Chazaka, part of the mysteries of Chazaka, the illogic, the counterfactual of Chazaka, is sometimes expressed itself in the fact that it does funny things with time. I can move a Chazaka tell me out today, but can't tell me out tomorrow. Facts are facts. Yeah, but Chazaka isn't about facts. I mean, Chazaka is based on facts, but it's not telling me what the facts are. It's telling me, B, you don't know what the facts are, here's what you do. Okay. It's merely a rule of Hanaga. So number one, and it is specifically, you asked it before about Rav Meir, Chazaka in particular is specifically a rule that continue to act now as you have up until now. So it doesn't have future predictive power. It also, in terms of where it's rooted, deeply rooted, forward focused. So Chazaka is only present focused, and Chazaka, but Chazaka does have to be deeply rooted. Chazaka means be mamshich into the present, your previous hanhaga. Continue to act as you have acted up until now. That's the limited chiddush of Chazaka. The rule specifically is continue to act as you have acted up until now. If yesterday you knew the mikvah was mala because you measured it, and therefore you treat the mikvah as a valid mikvah, so you can continue today, even though you haven't yet measured, continue to act as you did yesterday. So what that requires, on the one hand, means it doesn't push into the future. Nafkamina number two. On the other hand, it also means, Nafkamina number six, Chazaka shalo nizbara b'shaita, Nafkamina number six, is that you have to have already been acting in the past. All that Chazaka is the mamshich, your past hanhaga, which was based on knowledge, into continue that as a present hanhaga, even though now we're besafik. But that means it has to be that yesterday you knew, and you were actually acting on it. It was actionable data yesterday. Yesterday the mikvah was malay, and I knew it then, and therefore I practically treat it as malay. Whether someone actually went to mikvah yesterday or not is irrelevant. But it was actionable data. It was implementable knowledge. It was nisbara b'shaita. So if yesterday I knew that I was tar, and I knew it yesterday, I was able to act tar, now I don't know what happened, continue to act tar. I know that the Isa was tar 5 minutes ago, I'm not sure if that changed. So the answer is a row, Chazak will say continue to treat as tar. So if I would have known even Akiva over a year ago, if I would have known a year and a half about the animal was not a trefa, how would I know? I don't know. We had a bovine CAT scan. I have in my sukkah a couple of from radiologists who had a little time on their hands a couple of years ago at our sukkahs for some Simchas Yontif. So I have in my sukkah one of the most unique wall hangings we have in the sukkah is three Esrog pictures side by side by side. An X-ray, an MRI, and a CAT scan of an Esrog. Kavadiyantis. So I assume they clearly did not file for health insurance because I don't think the Esther was sick, nor do I think the Esther gets covered by a health insurance policy. But Kavadiyantis, so they had three scans of an Esther. So if you took a CAT scan, an MRI of a cow, a living cow, and said, oh, look, it's not a trefa. Okay, so now we know about those. We actually checked without killing the animal. We checked and we knew the animal's not a trefa. Okay, get on it. So then, a year and a half ago, I knew it wasn't a trefa. Or yesterday, I knew it wasn't a trefa. Because I did a CAT scan. If I know, okay, then in that day of the CAT scan, I say, Rabbi said, this is not a trefa. Get on it. So then we can continue to say we have a chazaka, it's still not a trefa. That would be a chazaka. A month later, a year later, maybe even 3 years later. Because there was a moment in time when I could say, I know right now that it is right now not a trefa. Like, I know right now that this Issa is tar. I know right now that the mikvah is mali. I measured it. I looked at it. Okay? But the chazak is based on there was a moment in the past when I knew something. I knew something to be true at the time. It was actionable data that I could be knowing based on that vados. So then you continue to be knowing in the same way, even if your vados disappears. I'm no longer sure the mikvah is male. I'm no longer sure the Isa is tar. I'm no longer sure the animal is not a trefa because I'm not doing CAT scans every day. Okay, Chazaka tells me, but continue to act the same way. But if I never knew, it's right now I know that a year ago it wasn't a trefa. But at the time I didn't know. It was never a moment when there was a present tense knowledge that you could have a hanaga based on. That's what Tosa says. Chazaka shalo nizbara b'shaita is not going to help. Yeah.
If you did treat on an animal, wouldn't that be having used the anhaga of chazaka that you were able to shaft it?
No. How I shaft an animal,
If you say you're using rove, then that gets rid of tozol kasha, because then you're using
that's why the Gemara says. And that's why the Gemara says, and thank you for the perfect segue. That's why the Gemara says that this is a mucker for Rove. Now Tosas Kasha. Why is Para doing a mucker for Rove? Maybe the fact that we're not worried about Trefa is because of Chazaka. Because it's Becheska saying a Trefa, because a year and a half ago it wasn't a Trefa, clearly. After all, it's alive today. So maybe the fact that I treat the paraduma as a non-trefa is based on chazaka. Tos says no. Chazaka shows bar b'shaita is worthless. Chazaka only works if it's bar b'shaita. Another weakness, the sixth nafkamina in Rav Shimon's Chakira. But that actually opens up something interesting, which is, so let me ask you a question. And here we progress to the other aspect of the sugya. We'll deal with very briefly. Let's talk about, like, let's forget about Parah Aduma and Carbonola. Let's talk about Lacha Lamaisa. Back on the ranch. You're raising cows in Nebraska. You're raising cows in Texas. Right? And you're shechting them cows. Some of which you're shechting for the kosher market. So how does it work when you shech the cow? Not for a Carbonola. And not for an Egla Rufa. And not for a paradum. You shech the cows for supper. I don't mean like the Kohan were eating chaz of a shok for supper. I mean like chulin. Behemas chulin, regular, normal, kosher animals. They are not kadosh. They're not paraduma. They're not a kohan. Just regular kosher meat. How does kosher meat work? Kosher meat also needs both to not be in the veil, which we take care of by doing a proper shrita, and to not be a trefa. Trefa isn't just puzzle for karbanas and for paraduma. Trefa is also not kosher for human Jewish consumption. So how do we know that? So we're not quite limited as with an ola. We're not limited as with a parah aduma. We do butcher the animal after you shecht it. You cut up into pieces. Like if you didn't know better, you might think that meat grows on foam trays in supermarket shelves, right? But it doesn't. So by the time you get it, obviously it's been cut up into pieces. Obviously you're allowed to cut it up. So let me ask you a question. How do we make sure it's not an avela? We do. Shrita. How do we make sure the animal isn't a trefa? Check. How many trefas do we check for? One. Which one? One. Right? Anyone ever see that be done?
Hopefully some
now. Really? I'll tell you a story. The first time I ever saw this done, many, 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 many years ago. Those of you who have spent time with me in Beit Meir, I may remember the food teal. So the original, the first iteration of the food teal, long before it was a teal, I think the first time it's ever happened, it occurred at across at the corner of the bus stop, across diagonally across from the traffic circle on a Friday. They had like a mitzvah fair, like hands-on. They had that sofer came to show how tefillin work, and someone explained about tzitzis. Then the grand finale of the mitzvah fair was there was a fellow came on an Arab Shabbos morning to shecht a sheep in the park many years ago. And after the shechita, he demonstrated, he took apart the animal, he explained the difference to organs, explained some of the dinim. So, Igin HaNasha, I think he explained about the Zerol HaChayim V'keva, and he explained about checking for trefus. So I asked him, you know, as he's, you know, doing this halachic dissection, so I asked him, so how are you going to plan to check the lungs? Are you going to blow them up? Because if lungs have a hole in them, then they're a trefa. There are different ways to check. The lungs are complicated, ripply organs. So to just do a direct visual examination would take forever. So you use some sort of tool or another to check. One way to do it is to put it into water and you watch to see if there are bubbles. Another way to do it is to blow up the lungs and you see. If you blow up a balloon, you can tell very quickly if a balloon has a hole in it or not. So you can blow up the lungs. So I asked him, how are you checking lungs? You plan to blow them up. So he says, now, Tavim is Nadev. You're volunteering. And next thing I knew, there was like bronchial tubes being like thrust in my mouth. So there wasn't really a lot of time to think. So I was like, wow, this is an opportunity that I've never had before. Here goes. And I have to tell you that lungs have much greater capacity than you would think. The amount of air, I felt like I was running. I took a deep breath and started blowing. And they're like endless. just keeps going and going and going and going. A Talmud of mine, who was an EMT, said he was trying to reach me in time to hand me his one-way valve for rescue breathing. But he didn't make it in time. It was definitely a unique experience. So we do check, well, however you do it, whether it's by blowing or by sticking into water or otherwise, you do have to check the lungs for trephus. But no one, it's not just on a carbon ola that we don't cut open the cranium to inspect the dura, the krum shel moach, to look for a hole. We don't do that on any animal, even though we could. The ola, you can't. But a stomach kosher animal that you chef, you could take the time. It would be hours and hours per animal. Incredibly, the cost of kosher meat would be through the roof. It would be hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a pound. It would be super, super labor intensive. But if that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. I mean, Suffolk Dreisel Hummer. Suffolk Trefa. So why aren't we checking for all the 8 Yud Ches Trefas? We should be checking the liver, we should be checking the heart, we should be checking the we only check the lungs. Ma piton. Why we check the lungs? Why are we not checking for everything else? So the Gemara tells us. Rove. Question 1 second. So if there's a row, why aren't we checking? Why are we checking the lungs? Why not rely on a rove? Ooh. Oh, right. 1 second. Let's just think about that for a second. If there's a rove, most animals don't have a puncture in the lungs either. So why are we checking the lungs if we don't have to check the heart or the liver or the spleen or the brain? Or because after all, we have a rove to rely on. So why don't we check? Why are we checking the lungs? There's a rove there too. Not as strong a rove. So that introduces us to an important idea, which is. And within the world of Rove isn't just a yes or a no. There are different levels of Rove. And let's build it out like this. You know, if you have a Rove, let's say 70% or so. So that's a pretty solid Rove. But if it was 90%+, that would be an even more solid rove. That's what the Gemara earlier in Pesachim talks about. That this is a rove, this is a nice rove, but still, sarach livdok. If you can check, you have to check. If it's a really strong rove, then you don't have to check even though you could. So, the chances of holes in the lung are small, but more than 10%. So if I can't check the lungs, I don't. For instance, I milk a cow and I drink its milk, I haven't checked the lungs. So the call of trefa is an issur d'oraisa. The answer is yeah, but it's alive, so I can't check it. So then I have to rely on the rove cows are not trefas, don't have a trefa even in the lungs. But once I shecht it, and now it's a question of eating the meat, well, the lungs are available. So then, if it's only a 70-80% rove, but it's 90+, so then for the lungs, if I can check, I have to check. But the chance of a trefa in the heart, a trefa in the brain, a trefa in the spleen, a trefa in the liver, those are so, so minimal, that's what we call only a miut. Miut she'eino matzoi, it's an uncommon miut, because it's less than 10% miut, that's already, you don't even have to check. But if it's a rove with a miut ha-matzoi, so then, it's a rove, but if I can check, I should check. Now, the Gemara in Pesachim, because of time, let's leave it outside, you can look inside. The Gemara in Pesachim has a fascinating daf test, has a fascinating conversation about the rule of Ein Safik Motzi Midei Vadei. That Safik doesn't take me away. If I have a Safik, so, and I have a Vadei, I can't rely on the Safik if there's a Vadei. What does that mean? So if you take a look, the Gemara is clearly talking about Rove and Chazaka. a suffix, I have a rove, but vada used to be for sure one way. It used to be for sure one way. So I can't rely on a rove if there is a suffix. So for instance, Rava says, the animal, the mouse or the rat carries chametz into the house, it probably ate it up. So why are we worried about the chametz? So Rava says, because ein safek motzi midei vadai, you know there was chametz there. The rove is that he ate it up, but there's a miyat that he didn't eat it up. Ein safek motzi midei vadai. So 1 second. That's a direct kasha, a direct stira, to Ruba Vachazaka, Ruba Adif. The Gemara seems very comfortable assuming, ein safek motzi midei vadai. The Gemara says, I sometimes... But once again, here we're in Psachim Daf Yud, Taftes, and some other Gemaras of Avodah Zarah, we say Ruva v'Chazaka, Rov loses. Safik means Rov doesn't win against Avadai Chazaka. The Gemara says, aye, but that other Chazaka that from people always make sure their food is kosher, that's not a Safik, that's a Avadai. What seems to be going on is the following. That I could divide Rov into different layers. A 70% rove, that's Ruba Chazaka, Ruba Adav. A 51% rove, a 60% rove, then you say that type of rove loses. Ein Safik Motzi Midei Vadai. Why? Well, because what do we say? What's the rationale for Ruba Chazaka, Ruba Adav? Because rove is a mavara, while Chazaka is merely a hanhaga. As 80% rove tells me, here are the facts, so Chazaka is irrelevant. If I have a 51% rove, does that tell me that the facts? Not really. It's not a rove bari, it's not a healthy rove. That's a shvacha rove garua. It's a weak. Yeah, 51%, technically it's a rove. But it doesn't actually tell me, there's no mandate, shall we say, in political language. Right? There's no assumption that those are the facts. The fact that 51% of the time that the mouse eats the bread and 49% of the time the mouse leaves it over for tomorrow, that convinces me that the bread is gone? No, it's just a rule. In other words, a level one rove is just a hanhaga. It's a rule. It's a rove. There's a rule that you follow rove, but it doesn't actually tell me anything. A level two rove, a rove bari, that's already... For the Chachamim, a beer. That's already a substantial. A 70-80% chances, 3-1, 4-1 odds, 2-1 odds, that already tells me something. That's not stama rule, ahanaga. That for the Chachamim is already a beer. But even beyond that, there are more levels. Right? If I can move up to a level 3 rove, where it's above 90%, it's not only rove bari, but even the miyut is a miyut shein amatzi, I don't even have to check it. It can even be a level 4 rove, maybe even level 5. But for now, the level 4 rove, where the miyut is only a miyuta, the miyuta. Sounds familiar? Rabbi Meir, this is where Shechter organizes the sugya. Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim both agree. We already been limiting Rabbi Meir. Let's end by limiting Rav Meir somewhat. We may say, it's not Rav Meir doesn't hold the rove. He just thinks the rove is going to be limited because rove sometimes is not going to work when it's against the chazaka. Why? Because he thinks rove is just a hanhaga. The truth is, everyone agrees that rove is a beer, and everyone agrees that rove is a chazaka. And that rove is a hanhaga. Everyone agrees that a weak enough rove is a mere hanhaga. Everyone agrees that a strong enough rove is already telling me facts. The question is just where you draw the line. The Chachamim think that a level one rove, a rove garua, is a mere hanaga. Even the Chachamim agree in Psachim Daf Tes, ein safek motzi midei vadai. But they say once you get to level two rove, a 70-80%, that's already a healthy rove bari, and that already tells me something. That tells me facts. Rav Meir says no. I agree with you, level one rove is a hanaga. I think a level two or three rove is also a hanaga. But what? Even Rav Meir agrees, if it's a mamash, a 99% rove, 99% rov. Rav Meir agrees. If it gets strong enough, then itaka is a birur. It's just a question of where you draw the line. Do you say anything above this is already a birur, or only something above this? Level 2 and above, or only level 4 and above? But again, Rav Meir agrees, they all the time agree in principle, that a rov that's too weak is a mir hanhaga. It's technically a rule. It doesn't actually tell me anything factual, in which case it can lose to chazaka. Ein safik motz midei badai. If it's a strong enough rov, numerically strong enough, that's actually compelling and telling me data, so then it's gonna knock out the chazaka. And that brings us back to where we started. That brings us back to a Tosis on Gittin Daf Beis and Beis, where the Gemara said, "Stam Sofer the Dainim Mikra Gemiri, the Sofer Yadainim, they know about Lishma, and therefore even Rabbi Meir agrees that we're okay. I'm just also merely a rove. It's not Vados. There could be Sofer Yadainim who are just political hacks." Just patronage, they don't actually know their dinim. Rare, but it could happen. So Tosa, don't worry. Rav Meir agrees because it's a mi'uta de mi'uta. What does that mean? And now all these pieces come back to help us understand that Tosis. Now that we understand there's a notion of birur, a notion of hanhaga. And that and we saw hanhaga plays that in many ways. And specifically that chazaka. The reason Rov wins over Chazaka when Rov is a beer and Chazaka is a Hanhaga, but not otherwise. And the Machlok is Meir the Chachamim is just a question of how strong, numerically strong, does Rov have to actually be operating as a beer rather than merely as a Hanhaga? Which translates into how strong does Rov have to be to defeat the Chazaka. Even the Chachamim agree that a mere level 1 Rov, a Rov Garua, loses to Chazaka. That's Psachim Daf Tes. Ein Safik Mosim Devada. Once you get to level 2 Rov, a healthy Rov Bari, that's already the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir, and the Chachamim, in Kedushin Daf Pei. We say Rov Chazaka, is that already Mutek Mandalay, say Dami? The Rov Bari ready, we ignore the Miyad because Rov Bari is Mavar? Or no! It's also merely a rule according to Meir. Once you get to a level 4 row, miuta de miuta, teeny tiny miut, overwhelming 99% row, they even Meir says, there I already agree, that's more than just a hanhaga. 99-1, that actually tells me data. That's a halachic standard of evidence, in which case even Meir would agree if you have a level 4 row with a mere miuta de miuta against it, for instance, Stam Safra the Daini, Migma Gemiri, that's such an overwhelming rove. Ibrahim Meir says it is a birur, and therefore Ibrahim Meir agrees that rove overpowers a chazaka, which is a mere hanaga, and therefore, coming back to where we started, that's why you want to know why it is that Rabbah thinks that one shliach is naftei p'vaynech v'nechtam. I to Davisha Be'erva, the answer is, min haTorah, I don't need anything. Why? Min haTorah, I have a rove. Min haTorah, I'm convinced that the guy's written Lishma based on a rove, even from Medina Sayyam. What type of rove? The woman's Becheskes Eishas Ish. You're going to give her the get and tell her she can go marry because probably the get is kosher? She's Becheskes Eishas Ish. The answer is, we're relying on a rove. Relying on a rove, the Gemara says. Now we can reread the Gemara and Gittin Daf Beis with new glasses. Yeah, Ruba Chazaka, Ruba Adif. That's right. Rov the Kianim. So the Rov overpowers the Chazaka. The Gemara says, Rav Meir doesn't agree. Remember your Kiddushin Daf Pei? Remember your Taharas Paragimel? Rav Meir doesn't agree. Tiganim Sebesada Issa. It's the same as the Gez Rov Lishma, but the woman's Becheskes Eishas Ish. So, is Machlok is remaining the Chachamim? Is Rabba only following the Chachamim? The Gemara says, no. The rove here is such a strong rove that even a mayor would agree that it works. This is, it's not Stam, most people in Medina Sayyam know Lishma. That's not a level 4 rove. That's maybe a level 2 or level 3 rove. That's not a level 4 rove. But the Gemara says, we don't, and here we come back to one of the other rules of rove. You have to look at as much data as you have. Not looking at Stam, people in Medina Sayyam. We're looking specifically at Sofer HaDayanim in Medina Sayyam. So far, Dayanim, that's already a more specific, more narrow demographic. You're looking at data that's that granular. It's not just 70% no lishma. It's 99% no lishma. That's already a level 4 rov, so strong, as Tosa says, even Meir agrees that that type of level 4 rov is not merely a hanhaga. That type of level 4 rov is a beer, even according to Meir, and therefore even Meir agrees that we would rely on that rov in the face of chazaka, and we would, min ha-Torah, allow the woman to, even though she's the cheskes ha-shazish, we would allow her to remarry based on the super strong rov, level 4 rov, Stam Safri Dadani Migamigamiri, and that's why the whole need for Fanech Fanech Madolim Drabanan, so Mishumigun, Akil Rabbanan, it's enough to have one. And now you see that the world of Torah Sasfakis, and many, many of the Gemaras that we looked at, appreciating in general that Rov is a beer and Chazakas Anaga, specifically, and seeing that play out in Gittin, and throughout other Masechtas, in Psachim, and in Chulin, and taking it back specifically to Ruva Chazak Ruva Adith, we now see that now our Gemara sings. The goal is to now appreciate back home. Now we see Gittin Daf Beis is really is using Kiddushin Daf Pei and Psachim Daf Tes in other terms. But this is the classic clash of titans between the ultimate real clash of titans, not on a hardwood court, but a clash of titans, which is fun. But this is a truly non-ephemeral clash of titans between Rov and Chazaka, which plays itself out in a variety of contexts throughout Shas. Specifically, that's now, when you have the perspective of other Masechtas, you appreciate that was going in front of our nose, and getting that vase. This is another iteration of Rov versus Chazaka. But what's unique here, as opposed to Psachim Daf Tes, where everyone agreed it was a level 1 Rov, everyone agreed that Rov loses. And Safik Emotzi B'dei Vade, because it's only such a weak Rov, a Rov Garu, a level 1 Rov, even according to the Chametz HaHanaga, as opposed to Kiddushin Daf Pei, where it was a Rov Bari, a level 2 Rov, where the Cham held it's a beer, but Meir held it was a Hanaga, getting Daf Beis, is a level 4 Rov, where it's such a strong Rov, even if everyone agrees that Rov is a beer, that everyone agrees that Rov does work, and that's why, L'chol HaDeis, both according to man and according to Chachamim, you should be able to, min ha-Torah, assume that get is l'shma, despite the fact that there's a chazaka, a cheska se'ishazish, Rov would definitely win L'chol HaDeis, dafka, getting of days. And now we begin to appreciate our sugya.